Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 WAMW and worldwide live from WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Swartzentruber. Each week we focus on a topic important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligonie. Well, I'm excited about today's show. I've got a friend on today who's just recently here finished up his legislative session for the year, and that is our State Senator, Eric Bassler. How are you today, Eric?
Doing great. Great to be with you this morning.
Well, thank you for coming, and I know you're a busy guy, and I know you're just getting the opportunity to get back from Indianapolis and spend some time with your family and on things that are actually important, right?
Truly, yes.
I appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk to us a little bit about the session. We're going to kind of do a legislative roundup, if we can, today. And the first thing I want to talk to you about, Senator Bassler, is just kind of how the session ended for you. And the session in this type of year, and in an even year, it ends in mid-March, and in the odd years it goes longer. But maybe tell me a little bit about how it ended this year, and sure, why that's a headline.
Yep, I'd be happy to, and I think you're right, it is a headline in the newspapers. You're right, this is the short session, so an even numbered years is when we have the short legislative session, and it's required to wrap up by March 14th. It literally needs to, if you're not done by midnight, then you're done. And any bill that hasn't been voted on and passed by midnight on the 14th, then it can't be voted on. There were several bills that we the Senate and also the House were working on. And as you and your listeners may know, once a bill passes one legislative body, so for example, once it passes the Senate, it then needs to go over to the House to pass there also. And if they would happen to amend that bill, it then needs to go through a reconciliation process. So there were several bills that were going through reconciliation over the last week and a half, 2 weeks. And we got down to the final day, and I guess there were probably somewhere between 10 and 15 bills that we were all still working to kind of get reconciled with the House versions. And sometimes, even though the Republicans, you know, they dominate both the House and the Senate, Republicans don't always agree on things. And so, the House had ideas on certain bills that different than the Senate, and we kind of went through that negotiation process and went back and forth and back and forth. But there's always a time lag. So let's say you come to an agreement, there's still kind of a process that you have to go through. It's not like the parties can agree and it's done. The parties have to agree, and then it has to go to back to our caucuses. It then goes to what's called Rules Committee. It then goes back out to the Senate floor, and the House floor would be voted on. So it's a time-consuming process. And there were a few bills that could be somewhat contentious, and those are the ones we were kind of down to. One had to do with the whole kind of the driverless cars, the autonomous vehicle bill. Another had to do with putting certain key metrics in place, or a dashboard, if you will, related to schools to help kind of forewarn schools if we would envision maybe some financial difficulties in the future for that school, to try to help them ward that off. And there was a few other bills, but those were probably the two most significant. There was another one that was related to school safety that we were working on. Yet when the clock struck midnight, on the Senate side, there was still one bill outstanding. And that was the bill related to Gary schools, Muncie schools, and then also the dashboard or the metrics we were wanting to put in place for school corporations. And then on the House side, I believe five or six different bills that just didn't get voted on before the clock struck midnight.
So you had obviously a couple moving parts here right at the end. Things simply didn't get done. You had one in the Senate, is that right?
Correct, yes.
And five or six in the House.
Correct.
And so who was dragging their feet on this? I mean, whose fault is this, Senator Bassler?
That's a good question. And in some ways, you know, we always hear the kind of how messy the legislative process is. And I've seen it be messy previously, but I still kind of consider myself relatively new. This is my fourth legislative session. And so I talked to some of the old timers after all this kind of finished up on the 14th. And some of those, one gentleman particularly, he said he'd been in the legislative process for 26 years and he'd never seen anything quite like that before.
I see.
Now, and I guess in the interest of full disclosure, it's also my understanding, I'm pretty sure this is fact and not folklore, but some years ago, it was fairly common practice that if they were getting close to midnight, they would simply take the clock off the wall, take the battery out of the clock, and stop it at 11:59.
Oh, wow.
And so they would continue to transact business, but the clock still said it was just 11:59. Now, obviously, we can't do that with the technology we have. So, you know, the time and the date show up on the voting board, so you can't pull those kind of tricks today. And I guess, I think that probably what we're going to see and what we have seen is you know, people on the House side pointing fingers at the Senate, and people on the Senate side pointing fingers at the House, and both bodies pointing fingers at the executive branch. And I got to be, I guess, kind of frank about that. And there's probably some blame to be laid everywhere. You know,
sure.
I think we kind of kept working hard through the night. And it just got down to the fact that, even when we came to agreement, and we were in agreement, all the bills had been agreed to, it's just that they couldn't get through that final hurdles, those final two or three hurdles before midnight. So the governor did try to act, and this is the kind of, maybe this will be of interest to historians out there, is the governor did try to act, and there was a resolution that we literally read and voted on at about 11:59 that would have extended the session for 1 hour. And we did that, and we voted on it. So we thought, okay, we've got till 1 o'clock. But the more we kind of talked about that, and there were some objections to it, and the more we thought about that, and the more we looked at the Indiana code related to that, we just weren't comfortable. So could we have continued? Maybe so, but it does set a kind of a questionable precedent to do that. And we just didn't know that the Indiana code was meant to be used in that manner. So we just said, let's be done with it. So we what's referred to as we sign and die, and we closed out the session.
And I like that. I think you have to have an end to it. I mean, if you can stretch it an hour, why couldn't you stretch it a day or a week or a month? Or
that's a good question. I've heard some people talk about a special session to finish these bills. And I'm not real inclined to do that. And the reason I say that is Indiana existed prior to this legislative session, and Indiana will exist after this legislative session, and it's not going to be the end of the state of Indiana if we don't go back into a special session.
And everybody knew when the session was supposed to end.
You bet.
And yeah. if we didn't get it done, we didn't get it done.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So, I know that's in the headlines, and it's been talked about quite a bit, I'm sure there's quite a bit of blame to go around, but let's focus on some of the substantive matters that you guys accomplished in this session. I want to talk about a handful of things, and we can take them one at a time or
sure.
However you'd like. You did a lot relative to education, workforce development, and then there are, I'll just say, miscellaneous. I mean, there
right.
was a Sunday sales bill that got a lot of headlines.
Sure.
Let's start with workforce development, something that you worked on, I believe, quite a bit in this session. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time working with two fellow senators, Senator Eckerty and Senator Chip Perfect, and we spent, I don't know, hours, and I don't know if it might be hundreds of hours working on workforce development issues. One of the challenges that Indiana faces right now is having a qualified workforce. And that really falls into a couple different categories. One is how do we help young people transition from K-12 to something? Now, in the past, that something has always been kind of, I don't know, biased towards or pushed towards a four-year degree. And I think we need to start having more balance to that, because I'm sure that you know, and your listeners know, many, many people who don't have a four-year degree, but yet they've gone on to have successful lives, successful careers. They've been able to be good community members, provide for their families, and so forth. And so we're trying to have some more balance when it comes to what does it mean to help a child move from K-12 to something. And so we need to get back from just a four-year degree, but be talking to young people about two-year degrees, be talking to young people about different types of certification programs. You know, my goodness, it's my understanding that if a young person gets a welding certification, they could come out and make $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. That's a good career and a good income for Indiana. So we're trying to add more balance and more funding to those kind of programs than what we've done in the past. Another challenge we face is there's a lot of people that are making, you know, they're making okay money, but are there certain skills that we could help them attain that would help them go from making, let's say, $10 an hour to making $15 or $20 an hour? So that's another area of workforce development that we're trying to focus on. And then another one has to do with to a certain extent, displaced workers. You know, as we continue to have advancements in automation, computers, and so forth, we're going to have more displaced workers in the future. So how do we create this environment in Indiana that allows those people to continue to learn the skills that will make them viable, productive members of society, provide for their families, and live good lives? Right now, the state of Indiana spends, I would not be surprised if it were, it's definitely hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe close to $1 billion on workforce development issues. And one of the challenges we have is it's all piecemeal. So there's some related to K-12, there's some in career and technical education, there's some at, say, Vincent University or Ivy Tech, there's some at the higher ed institutions. And there's no focal point. And so in some ways, there's no one person responsible. And unless you have one person responsible, it's hard to fix things. And so what we tried to do is put a process in place, kind of put a structure in place that would allow the governor to have a workforce cabinet that would have one person in charge. And so if things are working, you can pat that person on the back. And if things aren't working, you can go to that person and say, hey, listen, what's going on here? We got to solve this problem. It's one of the greatest challenges we face as a state. Unemployment's very low. I had someone say, well, yeah, but we're eventually going to go through a recession. Well, I don't think a recession is an answer to this problem, you know.
Right,
So would you work on that?
Senator, how would you define workforce development? I mean, you hear those words a lot, but how would you actually explain it in a short way?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's going to be a short way to explain it, but ultimately it has to do with when you look at the employers we have today. Obviously, they're much more advanced technologically than they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So how do we educate a workforce to work in that environment? And that's going to continue to change and evolve. And that's one of the challenges we face, I think, is the fact that things do change so quickly. So, you know, how do you educate a child that's coming out of high school to have a lifelong career? I mean, Lord knows what the world's going to be like when that child is 35 or 45 or 55 and what the work environment's going to be like. My guess is that half the jobs that exist today probably didn't exist 10 years ago.
Right.
So those are one of the challenges. That's many of the challenges, but one of the many challenges we face going forward when it comes to having a viable workforce. Because if you don't have a strong workforce, ultimately companies can't expand, companies can't move here, and that's all obviously not good for Indiana.
Well, that's interesting. That I'm glad that you guys are focusing on that and you're working on that as one of the areas in this last session. One of the other things that is connected to workforce development that I'd like to talk about is education in the schools, and that's something that you are heavily involved with as well, committee-wise and through different bills. Tell us a little bit about how this session went relative to education highlights.
Yep, sure. There are some definitely key issues and key things that we did related to education, primarily K-12 education. One has to do with some additional funding. So for this school year, literally the one we're in right now, we've allocated an additional $25 million in funding. We've also set aside another $75 million for next school year. And the reason we've had to do that is attendance at our public schools was higher than what was projected. Now, some people say, man, couldn't you project better? But one of the challenges, you know, the public schools tell us in about January how many kids they're going to have that following August. Well, that's a fair amount of time, and things obviously change. And so the estimates we received last January when we were doing the budget, it turned out there were several more thousand students in our public schools than what was projected. And so therefore, when you look at a per pupil funding, there was a shortfall. The total amount of dollars was still the same that we were going to spend. But when you look at a per pupil funding, when you have more students, it declined. So we made them whole for this school year, and then we've allocated $75,000 for next school year in the event that the population is higher.
Million.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, sure. That's right. $75 million. Correct. Yeah.
So, I guess the schools that this impacted, they were pleased with that. Did they think it should have been more? That they didn't expect it, or what was was the result?
Yeah, they were definitely pleased with it. And one thing to keep in mind is it impacts every school, whether you have more children or not. Because, again, when you take the amount we're going to spend, let's say it's $6 billion, $7 billion, and you divide that by a million kids, you come up with, let's say, $6,000 per child. So that's how much we fund to every school corporation. So let's say that because we've allocated that $7 billion, and now that's spread among more school children, every school child, even, you know, Washington, Indiana, Bar Reeve, North Davies, Lagodi, they got less per child because of the higher number of children overall. So they're going to get additional funding whether they have more students or not, and obviously that's a good thing.
Sure. I'm sure you're getting positive feedback on that.
Yeah, as you can imagine, everybody's happy about that. Other things we're continuing to work on is the much-dreaded I-STEP. I mean, I'm sure you've heard a lot about that, and we're continuing to work on that. And probably the most significant thing we've done there, Grant, is previously there was one pathway to graduation, and a child had to pass the I-STEP exam. And if they didn't pass the I-STEP, they didn't graduate. But we're in the process of creating, again, multiple pathways to graduation. And our thought process there is, again, not every child's going to college. And so, yes, the I-STEP exam is still going to be a pathway. The SAT exam is going to be a pathway. But also the military exam is going to be a pathway to graduation. If a young person gets some type of industry-recognized certification, that's going to be another pathway to graduation. We think that's a more realistic and holistic way to think about young people today and not try to shoehorn them into one specific path, but also offer multiple pathways for a young person to graduate from high school. I think we still need to work on that. There's still work being done, but we're getting a lot of positive feedback on that from both parents and educators.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think for a long time, you know, when I was in high school and even in college, everyone thought that we had to get people to have a four-year degree. We had a glut of college students,
you know,
for a long time. Costs go up, and it leads to some unintended consequences for sure. Let's talk about a couple of these school bills that actually didn't get through maybe at the last second.
Sure.
I know there was House Bill 1315, school district financial well-being, and then there's also one on school safety.
Right,
if you would, talk a little bit about those.
Sure, be happy to. That was probably one of the disappointments for me personally was 1315. I worked a lot on that. I've been appointed to something called DUAB, and that stands for Distress Unit Appeals Board. And that board right now is overseeing two school corporations, Muncie School Corporation and Gary School Corporation, because they fell into significant financial difficulties. And so what this bill did was it continued to kind of change that process a little bit with respect to Gary and with respect to Muncie. That was the part of the bill that got all the headlines. But what I think is the much more valuable part of the bill was the part of the bill that was going to put metrics in place. And let's just call it a dashboard, for lack of a better term. We don't yet know how we were going to define those metrics, but we were going to work with superintendents and school administrators to figure out how best to set up a metrics. Let's say we came up with 10 measurements. We were going to measure all school corporations based on those 10 measurements. And that would allow us to hopefully head off ever having to take over another school corporation, because Lord knows the state should not be in the business of taking over school corporations. At some point, if they become in such dire straits, maybe we have to intervene. But with these metrics in place, our goal was to be able to kind of, I guess, keep that from happening. And so we were going to come up with a watch list, and if enough red flags went up,
a
school corporation would be on the watch list. And I understand that that's uncomfortable for a school corporation to be on that watch list, even more uncomfortable for them to be taken over. And so what we were going to do in addition to that is, for lack of a better term, I'm going to call it kind of a ramp up, if you will. And if a school was on that ramp to being on that watch list with those metrics in place, we were going to be able to say, boy, let's start working with that school today so they don't ever even have to be on that watch list. And so they don't ever have to be worried about being taken over.
So
that was one of the bills that did not get through.
Okay, so that was something that you would have liked to seen happen, and it did not get through. It also dealt with Muncie and Gary, is that right?
Correct, yeah. Those were kind of the big headline stories, but the important part of that bill was, I think, putting process in place that would hopefully keep the state from ever having to take over another school corporation.
I see. And another thing that I saw was the school safety measure. It was kind of a pet project of the governor. It was something that he could point to that, hey, you know, this is something I'm trying to do and I'm trying to fund. Why didn't that get through? I mean, what happened there?
Well, again, it was just a matter of, and it's sad, but I have to say this, it was a matter of the fact that the clock struck midnight and it hadn't been voted in on the House side. That did pass the Senate side. It was on the House side to be voted on, but that was one of the five or six bills that they just did not get around to.
So it was the House's fault?
I'm not going to blame it on the House because, again, they were working hard to get things done just like we were. But I will say that we're going to look for a mech because that was going to provide an additional $50 million in funding for school safety. And so we're going to try and find some way to still make that happen outside the legislative process. And as we all know, because of the recent incidents in Florida, you know, this is a serious issue. And along these lines, one thing that we did pass, and we're going to study it this summer, we're going to have an interim study committee on school safety. And I know that can be a very sensitive issue. I know that there are people really on various, I don't even want to say ends of the spectrum, but in various camps, that don't want to talk about certain issues. You know, there are people who are very strong gun rights advocates, and they don't want to talk about guns. There are people that are mental health advocates, and they don't want to talk about mental health issues because they're concerned that then someone who has a mental health issue is all of a sudden going to be tagged as a potential mass murderer or something. And then there are the people that are more the pop culture people that don't want to talk about the violence that our young people are exposed to on video games and TVs and movies. I'm encouraging my Senate colleagues and our House colleagues, for that matter, when we study that this summer, let's look at everything.
Everything's on the table.
Everything's on the table. How can we provide a safer environment for our children? Because I'm going to say something that's going to be very blunt, that's going to come across as maybe even somewhat harsh when I say this, but we're talking about dead children. Are we not going to take some action when it comes to that? We've got to, and we're letting down our constituents, we're letting down the state of Indiana if we take no action whatsoever.
Well, that's tough. You know, just this last week, that was what we focused on this show was school safety, and mm-hmm. we had a superintendent and local chief of police on, and obviously it's a big issue right now, so it's disappointing, I guess, to hear that maybe nothing got done, and it sounds like the governor was disappointed as well.
Yeah, he sure was, and that's something, again, we're going to try to find some maybe administrative way where we can deal with that issue without the legislature taking action. And we've got some good examples right here in Indiana. There's a school corporation over in Southeast Indiana that was, I think, recognized recently by one of those TV news programs, maybe 60 Minutes or something, as being the safest school in the country. Uh-huh. And there are some things we can learn from that school to
best practices.
Yeah,
sure.
Best practices that other schools could then use.
Well, it sounds like you got certain things done in the field of education, but there are other things that maybe you wanted to get done that you
we'll keep
did
working.
Not get done.
Yeah, we'll keep working.
One of the things I want to talk to you about as well here, Senator, is miscellaneous items that got done. One of the headlines would be Sunday sales. We're mm-hmm. now a couple weeks into that where you're now able to purchase alcoholic beverages on Sundays. Tell me a little bit about that and how that happened.
Yeah, before the legislative session started, I was always kind of joking with people when I talked to them. The things were going to get the headlines were going to be alcohol and CBD oil, those are the things that got the headlines. But yeah, Sunday sales is now in effect. Now, one thing to keep in mind is there was always Sunday sales of alcohol, just not certain places and certain times.
Right.
But that's been opened up more broadly now. You can go to various retail outlets to buy alcohol. The last time I checked, the world didn't stop, didn't cease to exist because of it. There's other issues that we need to deal with respect to the alcohol rules and regulations. They're kind of this strange patchwork of rules that have been put in band-aid for the last, maybe almost 100 years now. So,
this is all very interesting to me. I guess we are going to be running out of time here. I want you to kind of give me, your last couple of words, your wrap up on what you were proud of, what you would like to see happen, just
a
little bit.
One other thing that I think is going to be very helpful to a lot of people is related to what's called CBD oil. And I've had all sorts of people talk to me about how that has helped their children when it comes to seizures. I've had even more senior people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s say that CBD oil has helped them with various medical ailments. And until recently, it wasn't entirely legal for them to be using those kind of substances. But now we've done that, made it legal in Indiana, and I'm pleased to have been able to do that this session. There are several other things that we did accomplish this session. But I guess maybe I can come back and talk on another program.
That'd be great. You will come back?
I'd be happy to come back, and then I would encourage everybody to stay in touch. I love it when constituents reach out to me via text message or email or phone or what have you. So hopefully the constituents will continue to do that.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on today, Senator. Sounds like it was a productive session. There are also always things to keep working on, though.
Yeah, there sure are.
Maybe it won't be slammed at the last second next session.
Yeah,
huh?
We hope that won't be the case again. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you for coming on.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much.
Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington, Lagodi. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. on 4-Star Country, the General 95.9, FM 1580 a.m. You can also listen to a copy of today's program and past shows by visiting WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Swartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every Saturday morning at 8:35 a.m. on Memories 107.9 WAMW and each Sunday morning on 95.9 and 1580 WAMW as we focus on the community.